Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stash Siokowski.
Today is Monday, April 17th, and we have a show for you on the theme of favorite poems and poets. I think you're going to enjoy it, listeners. I think you're going to enjoy it too, Stash.
I think so. This was a very creative theme. I liked it very much. I didn't even have to think about it. I actually had to do was reach over and pick up my clipboard when I read your note the other day and said, whoa, there they are. There's three of my favorite poems.
All right. So you're prepared.
I think so.
Do you want to talk about the Speak Story series?
Yes, but
wonderful show last week.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yes. I just. Boy, we had Carmen Deedy on Tuesday and Wednesday, and we had a nice audience on both nights. And on Wednesday, we were on the stage again at the Frank Center. There was a bigger turnout on Wednesday. And I believe, I know everybody was pleased with Carmen's performance, and, Terry and I took her to dinner along with Carolyn Rodas after the Tuesday show and had a wonderful time at the bistro, mostly listening to her, but we also contributed a bit. You could guess that I contributed some anyway. So it was interesting to be with her.
Such a character. And her performance was just amazing. And she could have gone on for another hour if we had let her.
I believe me.
It would have been wonderful.
Yeah. And I know she had a great time at the Mogginsville Elementary on Wednesday.
Do you know what she told? Well, you were there, so what did she tell?
No, I didn't go.
Oh, you didn't go.
No. She told children stories.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would love to have gone if she was going to tell to the fifth or sixth grade and have her tell the story she told on Tuesday about Dill.
Well, she said she has told, she seemed to be saying she had told that for fourth graders.
Well.
Some version of it.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm looking forward to in May 9th and 10th, Andrew Agapor, which, and I hope John's listening because, he's a storyteller and a scholar of religion. Comes from Charleston, South Carolina, has a Muslim Iranian father and a Christian British mother. Now, there is a bowl of soup for you. Stories look back at those humorous, mundane moments in life that are actually endowed with cosmic significance. Wow, what a statement. I like that. Say, when after I pass away, somebody might say something about Stash was a storyteller who told boring stories but was so entertained by them himself that his audience enjoyed it.
Can I will write that down.
There you go. I thought it was written already. Okay, so, and Andrew Agapor, May 9th and 10th, and I do not know where he's going to do his community thing. We always have the storytellers go to someplace in the community. If it's at all possible, we do in a school, but sometimes that's not possible because schools might not be in session or whatever. But I'm looking forward to this. I have enjoyed some of the storytellers who have a religious bent. I don't think I've ever not enjoyed a storyteller who had a religious background, because they weren't preaching, I don't think. But anyway, I think this it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. And I hope this picture is as good as most of the other pictures we have the last couple of years, because he looks young. And I've been fooled a couple of times. 2 years ago, I couldn't wait to see this very nice-looking lady who I had heard about, and I was excited about it. And then when I went into the speak performance space, there was this woman up front, and I thought, oh, maybe the storyteller brought her grandmother. So I guess
you ageist you.
No, it wasn't that. It was that she didn't look anything like the picture. You know,
like her grandmother.
She did look like a grandmother.
But she didn't look like her own grandmother.
Well, I don't know. You know, who knows? Her own grandmother might have looked like me. You never tell. Okay. And thanks to Andy for starting the show for us.
Right.
This is wonderful. This is a wonderful song. Original composition of Tarry Here. I think it. You know what I wonder? I wonder if Andy has ever done any video of sitting on the porch someplace singing that song with some people. I think that would be a great YouTube.
I think he did it. He used it on his webcast. I don't think it was his patron.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But it might have been, because I remember seeing a couple of those.
I think that would be neat. Anyway, so are we ready to begin?
We are. You have to remind me to talk about Susan Gordon coming to Stories in the Round on April 24th, because last time I forgot until the last 30 seconds, and I had to talk really, really fast to get it all in. So I want to do that before we
Okay.
Go ahead. Tell us a story or read us a poem.
I am going to do a poem, and I'm going to do, I'll say a little bit of a background for this. I actually wrote this sitting in front of a classroom of sixth graders who were taking a test. And so I thought, well, I don't have to do much. You know, I don't have to worry about the kids. So I usually have a notebook with a notepad with me, especially in the classroom. So I picked it up and started doodling, and then I was inspired. And so this is a composition of mine. Here we go. On soft breezes, your name comes, or perhaps just from my mind. And my heart beats more quickly as I think of what I'll find when I travel to respond and say, I love you so. How could I help but answer and whisper that I care? And say, I'm yours, my love, because you are so fair. Your touch means more than words can tell. You thrill me each time I sense you being there. And my wonder goes on at the sight of you. My delight in knowing my love is true heightens each moment I come to know you are my desire, my partner, my friend. Ever more and more as we grow on soft breezes. This is dedicated to Terry Lee.
I know. That's a wonderful poem. That is
I'm glad you like it. Terry likes it too.
I'm sure she loves it. Yes. That's a wonderful.
Yep. I wrote that shortly after we began dating.
My goodness. How long did it take you to show it to her?
The very next time I saw her. I'm not good at holding back things. you know that.
Especially something that wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been very pleased with it. And Terry actually has put this to music. So if you ever got a chance, I don't think you'll get a chance to hear it because she doesn't play the harp anymore. But I'm sure there might be a time when I could convince her to accompany herself on the piano and play it and sing it. Because hearing her sing those words is much better than listening to me say the words.
I hope we do get to do that.
Yeah.
She'll do a recording sometime.
I don't know. I don't try to convince her to do anything. she's retired and she does play the piano every day or almost every day. And she's working on classical music. And it's just wonderful. I'm so spoiled to be able to listen to that, you know. Okay, so that's
I just heard a few notes.
Probably can. She's okay. In another room.
Well, I'm going to do a slightly longer poem than what you just did. And this is a love song, but it doesn't end well. I think you've heard me do this one before. The wind was a torrent of darkness among the gusty trees. The moon was a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas. The road was a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor when the highwayman came riding, riding. Riding, the highwayman came riding up to the old inn door. Over the cobbles he clattered and clashed in the darkened yard. He tapped with his whip on the window there, but all was locked and barred. He whistled a tune to the window, and who should be waiting there? But the landlord's black-eyed daughter, Bess, the landlord's daughter, lading a dark red love knot into her long black hair. One kiss, my bonny sweetheart, I'm after a prize tonight, but I shall be back with the yellow gold before the morning light. Yet if they press me sharply and harry me through the day, then look for me by moonlight. Watch for me by moonlight. I'll come to thee by moonlight, though hell should bar the way. He rose upright in the stirrups. He scarce could reach her hand. But she listened, her hair in the casement, his face burnt like a brand, as the black cascade of perfume came tumbling o'er his breast, and he kissed its waves in the moonlight, sweet black waves in the moonlight. Then he tugged at his rein in the moonlight and galloped away to the west. He did not come at the dawning, he did not come at noon, but out of the tawny sunset, before the rise of the moon, when the road was a gypsy's ribbon, looping the purple moor, A red coat troop came marching, marching, marching. King George's men came marching up to the old inn door. They said no word to the landlord. They drank his ale instead, but they gagged his daughter and bound her to the foot of her narrow bed. Two of them knelt at her casement with muskets at their side. Death at every window, hell at one dark window, for Bess could see through the casement the road that he would ride. They tied the landlord's daughter with many a sniggering jest. They bound a musket beside her with a barrel beneath her breast. Now keep good watch, and they kissed her, and she heard the doomed man say, look for me by moonlight, I'll come to thee by moonlight, though hell should bar the way. On the stroke of midnight, hold on the stroke of midnight, the tip of one finger touched it. The trigger at least was hers. The tip of one finger touched it. She strove no more for the rest. She held her head to attention, the barrel beneath her breast. She would not risk their hearing. She would not strive again. For the road lay bare in the moonlight, the blood of her veins in the moonlight, and throbbed to her love's refrain. Look for me by moonlight, hoofbeats ringing clear, clip, clap, clip, clap on the highway. Were they deaf that they did not hear? Down the ribbon of moonlight, over the brow of the hill, the highwayman came riding, riding, riding. The highwayman came riding. Redcoats looked to their priming, and Bess stood straight and still. Clip-clop on the gypsy highway, clip-clop in the echoing night. Near he came and nearer, her face like a beacon light. Her eyes grew wide. For a moment she drew one last deep breath. Then her finger moved in the moonlight. Her musket shattered the moonlight, shattered her breast in the moonlight, and warned him with her death. He turned, he spurred back to the west. He did not know who stood, bowed with her dark hair hanging, drenched in her own red blood. Not till the dawn had he heard it, and his face grew gray to hear how Bess, the landlord's daughter, the landlord's black-eyed daughter, had watched for her love in the moonlight and died in the darkness there. Back he spurred like a madman, shrieking a curse to the sky, with a white road smoking behind him and his rapier brandished high. Blood red were his spurs in the golden noon, wine red was his velvet coat, when they shot him down on the highway, down like a dog on the highway. And he lay in his blood on the highway, with a clutch of lace at his throat. And still of a winter's night they say, when the wind is in the trees, when the moon is a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas, when the road is a ribbon of moonlight, over the purple moor. A highwayman comes riding. A highwayman comes riding up to the old inn door.
I had to turn, I had to reach for the mute button three times. I really like that. I performed that once a long time ago. It's almost impossible for me to believe I actually performed that without notes.
It's easier to sing than it is to memorize in, you know, prose or without singing. Alfred Noyes wrote that in 1906, which always surprises me. I know that theoretically, but it seems like such an old traditional tale that it feels like it would be much older than that.
Well, 1906 is over a century ago.
Yeah, I know, but it's not when highwaymen with lace at their throat were running around West Surrey, England.
Well,
as far as I know,
I don't know,
but it is a beloved poem.
And oh, I know.
I got that version, the musical version from a Phil Oakes album that I think he provided the tune for.
I have my copy of that someplace. Probably I could find it if I got up and looked around for it, but I know it's in my cabinet with lots and lots of other stories. So, and it is one of my favorites.
It's been my favorites for many, many, many years. I used to sing it when I was taking long trips in the car, driving.
And mixing and matching the conveyances.
Yes.
I want to make a little announcement to remind people, anyone who wants to find out information about Speak Story Series should look at speakstoryseries.com, and they will get all the information about where the performance is taking place. A reminder of the time, it's always at 7:30, and information about how to get tickets and how also to get an annual ticket, get a ticket for the year, season ticket. Mm-hmm. So I have two more poems, and these go together. Okay, one is about two people, and then the last one was written by one of the persons for the other one.
Okay, can I say that you're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org?
Absolutely.
Broadcasting from Martinsburg, West Virginia, Bolivar, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland?
Yes.
Okay, then I'll say that.
Okay, well, you did that very well. So
now, for your poems.
All right. So, I actually wrote this poem when I was living in Arkansas, because one of the shows that I've loved to perform, and I have performed with you, is Love Letters. And in Arkansas, I performed this with a woman by the name of Jackie, who did many shows with me. And we did this for a Valentine's Day celebration. We did it as a like an introduction to love letters. So we took maybe 10, 15 minutes before the main performance. And here we go. It's about for two wonderful writers, poets from years ago, Elizabeth Barrett and Robert Browning. Two lives begun 6 years apart, and lessons learned in similar ways. Formal school not suitable for him and forbidden to her. Those times were very dim. Loved and cherished by parents, free to explore with open minds, the world exciting and made so near by writings and books of many kinds. Both learned in speech, spoke many tongues, gained knowledge gleaned from foreign lands. Each wrote wise words from an early age, preparing to enter the worldly stage. His stature was less, but it mattered not, for praise from others meant little, compared to the notice of the only one who was more than hope could possess. Writing to tell how her words do please, words she has written mean so much more than others that seem hollow and miss what simply is true as never before. Perhaps an exchange of letters could be a sharing of thoughts, words penned by each, and minds so alike in poetry and praise may join in friendship in future days. And thus it began, a meeting arranged by a mutual advisor, admirer, to both a dear friend. The vigorous young man who admired from afar met the invalid woman, already a star. Weak and sheltered, protected by love of parent and siblings who held her so dear, she met her admirer and over some time gained strength and resolve to conquer her fear. The courtship forbidden to end as it would caused father to speak to her never again. But the love they shared grew each day. They became truly one and soon were away to a land where her health was better restored, a warm, sunny clime with the one she adored. They lived in joy and fame came to both. Their world of love soon blessed with a son, and friends did admire even works from the past, especially the sonnet written for one. Her illness returned and finally did claim her. And in his arms, she rested her last. Her final word, as she gazed at her love, spoke volumes of her life now as she passed. Beautiful, she said. And now, let us hear words written for him, her love so dear. The correct title for the poem that I'm going to read now, that was written by Elizabeth Barrett Browning, I believe is Words from the Portuguese or Songs from the Portuguese, as one of from one of her books of poetry. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach when feeling out of sight for the ends of being and ideal grace. I love thee to the level of every day's most quiet need by sun and candlelight. I love thee freely as men strive for right. I love thee purely as they turn from praise. I love thee with a passion put to use in my old griefs and with my childhood's faith. I love thee with a love I seem to lose with my lost saints. I love thee with the breath, smiles, and tears of all my life. And if God choose, I shall but love thee better after death. Elizabeth Barrett Browning, for her love, Robert Browning.
Those are wonderful to read together. Thank you, Stash.
Oh, you're welcome. I worked really hard on that one about the two of them.
Yeah,
I read. I did a lot of research, and actually, I was gutsy to do that in front of an audience because I'd never performed it anyplace else, and I really wondered how it was going to come across. But I got received lots of compliments from the audience afterwards because we. After we did the poetry stuff, we took about a 3-minute break, and and went to our benches in front of our desks and performed love letters.
Well, one of the things I like about it is that it's fun to listen to, beautiful to listen to, but it's also a recount. It's a good way to learn more about the two of them.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And there's their story. If anybody is interested in a really great love story, go to your local library and pick up some material on Elizabeth Barrett Browning and Robert Browning. Was very interesting. And her father absolutely forbid her to marry. And there is some information in books about her and her family that her father was concerned that she might genetically be able to produce a child that would not be acceptable in their community. Apparently, there was some suspicion that her parents had some genetic problems, not problems in a normal sense, but some genetic influence that might have been a great embarrassment to her father, who was a well-known man at the time. So I don't know. There's an intrigue, but I wouldn't care it. And especially, I think nowadays it's a wonderful story because it fits more with modern times. Except that modern times are not here yet. We still are not treating women the way they should be treated, equally and fairly, and without prejudice because they're supposedly the weaker sex. Every time I've ever heard that since I was about 13, when I finally did get the real story about babies. And I can remember a family Sunday in Virginia, my Aunt Martha's house. Some of the people talking, and they were discussing some political stuff and everything. And finally, my Aunt Martha's husband, whose name was George Nolan, and he was from Georgia, and he had the most beautiful Southern accent. Anytime I was near them, I wanted to be close to him so I could hear him talk. He just had this marvelous, you know. And I even thought as a young teenager, boy, I don't know how, because he was also good looking. He had beautiful hair and everything. So I don't know how anyone could hear him talk and not fall in love with him. You know, he could read a grocery list and it just sounded wonderful, because he really did use his natural accent and language very well. And they had met, my aunt and he and my aunt had met during the Second World War. They were both in the military. She was a WAC, and you know, he was in the army, and that's where they met and fell in love.
So it was he that told you where babies come from?
No, it was it was at that time in my life when I was about 12 or 13 that I finally understood some things about that. There was nobody telling me anything when I was a kid.
So how did you figure that out?
I listened when you know, there were adults around, and when I was at other people's houses and they would mention things, and finally some of the information clicked, you know. And of course my sister had a baby when, you know, pretty near that time, and
before that.
Yeah, just a bit before that. And my house was kind of closed when it came to talk about human reproduction. In fact, when I mentioned in front of my mother that my sister was pregnant. I got slapped in the face by my mother.
For using that word?
Well, where did you hear that? And I didn't want to rat out my brother because I didn't want to see him get slapped, although he could use a slap or two then. But I said, Tony told me. And she left the room, and the next thing I heard was she was scolding him for telling his little brother stuff like that. I think my mother was really, really, really not interested in anyone discussing, you know, how babies were formed, where they came from, and all that other stuff.
Apparently not. But you think she, well, I'm glad you did.
I am too.
Well, in honor of children, I have two short poems. Both of them, in my mind, are related to childhood trauma of one kind or another. But one isn't. Oh. It's one was back from the. It says it was written in March of 2009, and it's only credited to Bob N. An initial. The second one was written by a child, and that's the one I'll read after this one. This is called Jerk the Chains by Bob N. from March 17th, 2009, which is my dad's birthday. I think that's why I saved this poem. Jerk the Chains. Study a swing, long still. Still more, pity a child who knows not the thrill of chains jerking wild. Ah, head thrown back, toes treading on sky, on a pendulum's track, pump and pull, pull high. Jerked the chains wild, but where is the child? Where? Why these missing ones? Doing what while trapped inside? Entranced daughters and sons, children whose childhood has died. Come, child, jerk the chains, awaken to wind and sky. Come and swing away reins, pump and pull, pull high. Jerk the chains and fly. Swinging outside at the park on a swing was one of my favorite things to do. We lived right across the street. And I could always find a swing to swing.
That's it's lovely. That brings, has sparked a wonderful memory in my mind. The girl I was engaged to my senior year of high school, I've told that story a number of times, Jane, often when we had a chance on, especially like on a Sunday, if I didn't have a soccer game, we would walk to the park that was not too far from her house. Her house was about 3 miles from mine. And I would walk to her house. Sometimes I rode a bus that got me there within a quarter mile of her house. But often I walked to her house, and I often walked home. But one of the things that we do was go to the park. And she told me one of the favorite things for her was to sit on a swing. And she didn't have to swing a lot. She just enjoyed the environment and sitting on the swing and gently moving back and forth. And I have wonderful memories of doing that.
She didn't go as high as she could?
No, no.
Well, that was my favorite thing to do.
No, when and maybe when she was by herself, she would do that or something. But our sitting at the swings was, it was
romantic.
Kind of, it was, and it was kind of like the same way we would have sat if there was a porch swing, you know, for two people to sit on. It was just a matter of passing the time together in a nice, quiet place where we didn't have to deal with other people.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this one is much shorter, and it's by a 7-year-old. It was published in the Washington Post, April 28th, 2021. And there's about 15 poems in here by kids, most of them about COVID and what it was like and what they were, and they were looking forward to going back to school after being homeschooled for so long. But this one, it was a little bit different. It's called Light in the Dark by Fiona Mopes, age 7, from Alexandria, Virginia. When the world hit the bell that dinged at danger, and the people faced massive destruction, we knew that good things end, but so do the bad. If you close your eyes, you can see a gap in the dark, and you know that light is never really gone as long as you believe. And we all have our voices, and I still have pancakes with my family on Saturday morning.
That was written by a 7-year-old.
That's what it says here. And it was in the Washington Post. So,
wow.
Among many, I think she's about the youngest of the poets listed here. Some of them were teenagers. But
I would love to have her in my class.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What a.
Okay. I need to talk about stories in the round.
Yes.
It's okay with you. So Susan Gordon, who's a longtime storyteller and story mentor for me and many dozens of other people, is these days is concentrating mostly on writing. She's working on a novel about Liza and Jim, who are residents of the Allegheny Mountains in West Virginia. And around the turn of the 19th century to the 20th century, that part of West Virginia was clear-cut by loggers. And these are two people who are living on the slopes of the Alleghenies and trying to protect their land from being lumbered out. Communities in that region, in that time period, really suffered because so much was taken, so much of the land was torn up in getting the logs out. That people couldn't farm. The streams were destroyed. Farmland was destroyed. Whole swaths of meadow and lumber burned. Wildfires were rampant. And whole towns were just decimated. People left by the hundreds. And this novel is about these two people and their vicissitudes, their struggles as they try to save their land and continue their lifestyle, which all along was not an easy life. They were living a tough life, subsistence farming. Susan Gordon's been working on this book for about 5 years, I think, maybe six. And she's going to be doing readings from the nearly finished novel and talking about the research that she did in the Allegheny Mountains, the Laurel Fork, which is the creek that these people lived along and that is a tributary of the Cheat River. So she talks about her research on the Cheat and the many, many people in that area of West Virginia today, who helped her with her research and took her on hikes and drives and kayak trips along the waterways that she's writing about. So I'm really excited about it. I've heard excerpts from the books, from the book, from her novel in the past, and I think you have too, Z, Mr. Z. Stosh.
Yes.
But she's been reading some of the newer stuff and talk about what it's like to be writing about this time period and these people. So that's on April 24th at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown, 13245 Searfoss Pike, just west of Hagerstown, a mile west of the Walmart shopping center on Searfoss Pike. $12 in advance, $15 at the door, and you can get tickets, listeners, by calling me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638, or at my email address, Fanitsky, F as in Fred, as in Fanny, A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, at Hotmail. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay.
There will be more. That this is the grand opening, reopening of Stories in the Round, and we'll continue in as far as at least November with other tellers.
Cool. Very good. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. It's only a week away.
That's right. Well, I like seeing everybody come in.
That will be a lot of fun. My time clock here says that we have a few minutes left.
We do.
And I had one other poem about rest that I really loved.
About west?
Rest.
Oh, rest. I thought you said west. Like, you know, go west, young man.
Yes.
A mother could say, go rest, young man.
I'm not finding it quickly. I'm looking at a book of poems by Atina O. Danner, who's a time-traveling poet activist, she says, who dwells in the past to survive in the future. She's writing toward a beloved community, Black liberation and collective imagination. She lives near the traditional homelands of the people of the Council of Three Fires and the Menominee, the Miami, and the Ho-Chunk Nations with her partner, her pets, and two free Black children. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I do like her poetry. So I'm looking for this that I read earlier today.
And she must be Black.
She is.
I'm guessing. Yes. Okay. Yeah, while you're looking, I just finished the fourth book in a series written by Arthur C. Clarke, science fiction series, and then he was joined by Gentry Lee in the second, third, and fourth book, and the four books together were a combined 2,000 pages, and I haven't had a reading session, I guess, a long time. I read those in less than 10 days, which is, to me, was an accomplishment because it was science fiction and had to do with space. None of it took place on the Earth. It was way, way, way far out science fiction. And one of the things that I got a really big kick out of it was there were these creatures in it that were like mechanical bots. They really weren't just mechanical. They had some life force in them, but they were, you know, interesting. But at one of the places, in fact, it was on page 235 of the last book, I came across somebody asked a question about, well, what is a nillet? And so in a short paragraph there, the author had one of the characters spell out some of the timing of that these creatures used in their existence. And a nillet was equal to 28 seconds for a human being. And I'm not going to go into all of this because I know I don't want to have your hair get straight during this, you know. But it mentioned the connection between a nillet and a fang, and a fang and a woden, and a woden and a turt. And I did what you do sometimes. I took notes on all of it, and I even checked their calculation.
Oh, there's math in it.
Oh, yeah. And what I found interesting, and they never said a word about why, but it's based on multiples of eight. Each of the smaller unit, when multiplied by eight, gives you the next bigger unit. You know, I found it fascinating because not many books give you something like that.
That's even true.
You know, and it was very good.
Okay. I found two related poems. I didn't find the exact one I was looking for, but I think you'll like these.
All right.
Okay, so these are by Atina O. Danner, a poet that I just recently discovered. This first one is called Blessing of the Instigators. With honor and gratitude to surviving the mic. Bless the table shakers, the talkers out of turn, the power confounders and mic takers, agenda breakers. Bless the bridge burners, protecting the village by any means necessary. Peace be to the bummer outers, the conversation dead stoppers, naked emperor shouters, eggshell stompers. As you receive whispers and private notes of agreement, may solidarity illuminate your courageous path. These are the movements that knock us loose, shake us into the sky and out towards the stars. These are the impacts that force us together, drive our roots downward to reach for each other.
Wow.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one is called Generational Wealth. My grandmother was so tired, my mother was born tired. My mom is so tired that I'm tired right now. And I see my children getting tired. So it's time to put this to bed. I will gift time to my children. They will inherit a legacy of resting. Leisure time and vacation days taken. Sick time used to nap and renew. I'll steal time and show them how to eat it raw. I'll say yes to my babies on the clock. Show them how to tuck joy and stillness into the pockets of reclaimed life. When I accrue time, I let them see how I use it. When I take time, I give it to them and let them play. I save time in their names for them to practice how to protect it and spend it on rest. It has been said that the best things in life are free. Untrue. The high cost of the best things in life is time. My progeny will know that time seeds restoration, how creativity is nurtured by time to play, how love is deepened by time together, how revolution needs time to imagine, how healing and growing are possible, and what it takes to rebuild broken skin and bone, that wellness is rest time, is time. Is with
very good.
Atina O'Gan.
Yeah, this gave me an idea.
That's from a book of poems called Incantations for Rest, Poems, Incantations, and Other Magic.
I think sometime, I'm not sure you'd be willing to do this on the radio.
Here we go.
Yeah. Okay, really. I think it would be, the show has done this. I think it would be good to have a basic theme, not too well spelled out, just a theme, okay? And that then we should take turns writing the story on air.
Writing a story together, co-writing a story on a theme?
Yes. Without any preparing.
Okay, the only preparation I would need is that we would need to do something like that first before we do it on air, not the same story. A different theme entirely.
Okay.
Because it's hard for me to imagine how we would do that.
Really?
Yes.
Well,
We work really well together when we have a plan, a common plan.
We're enthusiastic.
But we've never created a product out of the air, whole cloth together. So I would want to do something like that.
Well, I think
it doesn't have to be a story. It could be, a collage or something. But I think
it would be good if it was a story because we both like stories.
Yes.
And we're storytellers.
And that's what this hour is supposed to be.
Yeah, and I think we could do that. In fact, I don't think it would be much of a challenge at all.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay.
You know, Laura First and I said we were going to rewrite Little Red Riding Hood. We were going to write a story about Red the Wolf.
Yeah.
And we did some of that at Kevin's workshop.
Yeah.
And actually, it was a pretty good story, but we never went any further than that.
No. I think it would just be a good exercise. You know, I like coming up with answers and ideas and stuff without having to think too much.
But thinking is the best part.
Well, yeah, but you know, I think the hardest thing about writing a story is worrying about whether it's correct or whether you use the best words or whether you get it down and all that stuff. The hardest
part for me is the ending. I always have a prompt and things I want to say, but I have trouble wrapping it up.
Well, that's why if we did something like that together, you wouldn't
have
to worry about it.
We might come up with a story, yeah.
I think we could. I really, you know. I think that would be a good idea. Anyway, I think we've used up our time.
I think we have. You have one last sentence you would like to say before I close us out?
Well, it's a lovely day. And I'm looking forward to a very busy week.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we were able to spend some time together today.
Yes, and I thank John before we went on there for using his Sunday afternoon to accomplish this.
For Monday.
Yeah.
So we just told our listeners today was Monday. So
right.
Okay. This
is not the show. Oh, you're gonna close the show. Go ahead.
This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stosh Sielkowski.
Closing out the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. We are independent community radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Oops, Bolivar, West Virginia. Martinsburg, West Virginia. And Hagerstown, Maryland. The Storytelling Hour offers you, our listeners, a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening. And John Case is going to tell us what's coming up next.
Well, see, we're talking about, smooth, very, very smooth jazz is going to be playing following this show.
Okay.
Extremely smooth.
Maybe I'll listen.